welcome. We are delighted to present to you a set of conversations with the pollsters who give lots of insights into what the Europeans of the different generations, different segments of the societies think about politics, what drives them to lending their support in the elections, what politics should all be about in the future. Welcome to this new pioneering episode of FEPS Talks. My name is Ania Skrzypek. I'm Director for Research and Training. And it's my absolute honor and delight to inaugurate with Marcin Duma, CEO of IBRIS, which is the Institute for Social Market Research, this new series where we are going to look at what the Europeans are thinking, what it means for the future of politics, and what sort of trends we can see developing across the European Union in the different places, regions, and countries. It's fantastic, Marcin, that we can have you for this first episode. I'm hoping for a heated debate. It's 35 degrees outside, so I'm expecting nothing less from this episode. So great to have you with us for this first episode of the new series.
It's my great pleasure and honor to be here in this opening pioneering episode of your podcast. Well, it is 35 degrees, so I think the atmosphere is already heated. We've got a little bit cooler spring and summer in Poland this year, but it is very tricky because the temperature of the air was a little bit lower than average. But the temperature of the political debate on the political process, it is overheated. And it is overheated, it was overheated before the election, and it is overheated after elections.
Exactly. So you've already hinted where we would start the conversation from. So let's start from easy and your favorite question, namely Polish presidential elections. We have just seen two rounds. The entire European Union and the world, one can say, held its breath in a hope. But the outcomes of the presidential elections, especially of the second round, as close as they might be, are of course a source of a lot of emotions. You've already hinted into that. But in preparing this episode, you've also said that they are quite insightful for the entire European audience. Why is that?
Well, there are some lessons coming from this year's election in Poland. And these are not the lessons only for Polish political scene, for Polish scientists, for Polish politicians, but they're also lessons for a broader audience. I mean, for Europeans, to some extent also the US, because this is what we are observing, or we have observed in Poland. I believe it has an impact not only in our country. And there are, well, at least four major lessons. The first, it is the validation of hypotheses that the right populism can be beaten by mainstream. So the mainstream can overwhelm the right populism with a proper agenda, with the proper strategy. This is the first lesson. I will just go on with that later. The second one, it is acceleration of demands. Well, it doesn't mean exactly that demands are more extensive, but the idea of this acceleration lies in shortening time between action, like voting, and time when we expect fulfillment, for example, of electoral promises.
So sort of a delivery criteria, you'd say.
Yes, but I think it's just a little bit more complicated. I will just go on with that later, because there are also two lessons to be mentioned. The second is the process of radicalization of populism and radicalization of its agenda that we have observed. It is somehow connected to the first lesson. I mean, that the right populism can be defeated. And the fourth, which I believe is one of the most important, and it's very coherent both in Poland, in the recent election, and in the US, in the elections they were held, the presidential elections that they were held last year, it is the revolution, a crawling revolution, but still a revolution in media consumption model. So there are four lessons.
Let's try to unpack them one by one, because at the beginning you said, you know, there was a hope, and I think we've discussed it. The entire European Union in particular had been so relieved with the 15th of October elections. The story was told that the authoritarianism can be stopped, that the right-wing radicalism can be stopped. And now everybody is asking, so what happened? Is it midterm, or is the story that we were telling ourselves about the breakthrough was just a temporary phenomenon?
I would say it's mismanagement of expectations.
Oh, all right. Okay.
We were, there was a great need of some positive story that this right populism, the radical agenda, the extremism can be stopped, can be defeated. And the story of victory in 2023 in Poland was exactly what we needed. Because we observed that after 8 years of changing the political system in Poland, introducing simply unconstitutional measures by the government of PiS, which is a populist, right populist party in Poland. And after all these 8 years, they can be defeated, the opposition can retake the government, and the voters are ready to change the government because of many, many reasons. We are not discussing this now, because it was already discussed in the recent 2 years. And we believed that this social sentiment stays with us, and it is still possible to exploit that. But it appears that the those populist parties, or not only populist party, but all populist movement, if they are defeated, they tend to return stronger. They tend to transform, adapt, using very professional measures to do that. It means that they were always very dedicated to this scientific approach to politics, data-based approach to politics. And when defeated, they just step back, regroup, change the agenda. They made extensive research, and they are back in the game.
It sounds like the right-wing radicals are better at doing their homework, because, I mean, what you've mentioned is that what they have going for them is this criteria of adaptability. Is that the case also elsewhere in the region of the Central and Eastern Europe?
Well, I think, avoiding a little bit your question, it is the best
that example. Means it was a good one.
Thank you for that question, but let me stress the other thing.
Okay.
No. But because I believe that the best example, a part of Poland, is still the US. Because we are going to the other lesson, and it means that this would have happened in Poland. It is not only a scientific approach, data-based politics, or data-driven politics, but it is also a question of some kind of a political trap, which is set up by the populist. Because this overwhelming victory, to be honest, not so overwhelming
in 2023. Not really, right?
Not really. In fact, was achieved by using a populist agenda by liberal social democrats and other parties who formed the current government. And it was a trap, because they used a narrative, they used an agenda, which at the end amplified this what is a core messaging of the populist. So now we can say after, well, nearly 2 years, that it was not exactly a defeat. They have just stepped back for a moment because they need this regroup. But they forced the mainstream politicians to enter the territory which is friendly for doing the politics. And this would have happened during this 1.5 year. It was, well, let's call it frankly a disaster. A disaster because all these things that they were promised using those populist means went into the very fast erosion of expectations of the people, of impression of empowerment, both people and government. So this victory, very interesting story, very encouraging story, was in fact a beginning of defeat we have observed in this spring in the presidential election. So we have validated this hypothesis that the right populists can be beaten. They can a little bit retreat, but they will go back stronger. And the reason that it happens lies in those other lessons that I have mentioned at the beginning. The acceleration of the demands. Well, the whole news cycle is shortened. We consume media very fast. It means that the news which will be present in media for a week, now they're present for 24 hours. So everything happens faster. And not only in the news cycle, but well, it happens in all of our areas of activity. If we buy something through the internet, it is delivered to us within 24 to 48 hours. I remember times when this chain of the delivery for consumers lasted a week or even 2 weeks, and we were okay with that. And now if something takes more than 24 hours, we are very disappointed, and we will not go back to this company or this seller who has not proved to operate fast enough. And it has a significant impact on politics, because this what we experienced as a consumers, we also experienced as a voters. We want it now, we want it fast. And here we can go back, we can go through the governments all around Europe, because this is what we observe in the UK. It took 7 months for the Labour to go back to the approval rating of Conservatives fatigued by 12 years of governing. 7 months. And if we look to the numbers presented in the polls in the UK, I don't think they have a good chance to fight back. We also have Germany. There is a little bit different situation, but they are only few months after forming the government. I'm wondering what would be the situation within the next months. We already observed that the AfD, the radicals, the right radicals in Germany, they took a lead in a few polls before the government was formed after the elections. So this acceleration is a fact. The voters demand everything at the very same moment, and they are not willing to wait anymore.
Well, the speed, the delivery, the sort of promises, you all hint to the fact that the rules of politics have changed. But even if the rules of politics have changed, there are certain issues that motivate the voters. And I think I want to ask two questions in regards of the Polish right in the variety of spectrums of the right, so from the center right until the sort of radical right. Here in Brussels, there is a preoccupation that the EPP family collaborates with the more radical right-wing forces in order to coin the deals that are more conservative, more right-wing oriented. Now, Polish situation is a little bit different, right? I mean, we have the, on one side the Civic Platform, then we have Law and Justice, but we also have Konfederacja of 20% and growing. So do you think that this kind of constellation that we know on the European Union level would at all be something sellable in the Polish conditions?
In fact, we're referring to the third lesson. It means the ongoing radicalization of the populism. The populists in Poland, they have recovered from the defeat in 2023. They have regrouped, and they have regrouped not in the manner that PiS is still getting stronger. Because if we look to the results of the first round of the Polish presidential elections, we will see that PiS itself haven't recovered, but the whole right side, measured as a conglomerate of different forces, something which is not far right, which is far, far, far right. It is the...
It's almost missing vocabulary to describe how far that is.
Extreme far right. The party of Grzegorz Braun, which brought the anti-Semitic messaging in Polish politics. Something unthinkable, because we don't use in Poland anti-Semitic narrative, and whoever does that in the last 30 years was just disappearing from the politics because he wasn't able to to get more than 1% votes. And now we've got a guy who is anti-EU, anti-Ukrainian, anti-migrant, anti-Semitic,
and anti-feminist, of course.
Well, that's obvious.
Sadly,
and he got 1.2 million votes, and it transfers to 6% of all casted votes. So this is an outstanding result. And he is pushing the Polish political scene more and more to the right. We have also the Konfederacja you have mentioned, which, comparing them to Braun, appear to be a moderate, a liberal to
some. That's quite incredible to say.
That's incredible, because we perceive them, well, if we spoke in 2023 during the general elections in Poland, we were perceived them as a extreme right. But now you've got Braun, who is an extreme, extreme right, and you've got Konfederacja, which, with having Braun on their right side, seem not to be that extremist. Maybe they're far right, or maybe they're just right political movement. And of course, we have PiS, which is the difference between PiS and all those two parties I have mentioned before is based on their approach to economy. Both Braun and Konfederacja have a liberal or neoliberal approach to the economy and highly conservative agenda on the other hand. So the PiS has more social approach, but it and also conservative agenda. This is what binds them. It is the conservative agenda itself. Maybe not the anti-Semitic messaging, because this is only a Braun
specificity.
But still, and this what I was thinking about, I mean, this regrouping, adopting, it is based not only recovery of PiS, who was governing 8 years, but the change of the distribution of party and voters on the whole right side. And if we take under consideration all these results from the first round, well, taking apart the polls, which are even worse than those results, we observe that the majority of Poles are willing to vote on the right or far right candidates. all these three people, I mean, Menten from Confederacja, Grzegorz Braun, who's an extreme far, far, far right, and Peace, they got 52% of votes. This is outstanding.
But why is that? I mean, I think that that's the question, you know, that everybody is asking themselves. Poland has been the country that, you know, made it during the financial crisis to be the cover story of economic success. It has been prized for so many different things in the last years, being solidaristic country, developing country, and so on. So how is it that possible that a country that would seem so prosperous and so open, and I'm not talking about the non-existence of poverty, I'm not negligent to that, but let's say from the perception, the international perception sphere, the country that is a success story has 52%, so more than a half, voting for right, very extreme right. I think that's a question everybody is asking. Also, because in the European context, Poland has this very proud democratic tradition. So, you know, it seems to be a massive cognitive dissonance here.
Well, it should be. It should have been a dissonance observed here, but it's not. Well, the reasons are pretty obvious, and they are shared by politicians and voters across the Europe or even across the Atlantic. It is the sense of rising cost of living and the rise of the salaries, which is not improving fast enough. It is all anchored into major, let's say, events. One, it is the COVID and the pandemics. We are, well, in fact, we are still recovering from that. And the second punch that the society's economies received was the inflation shock after the Russian invasion on Ukraine. And the sense of the societies, we haven't recovered from that. And it is lasting for 5 years. And if we go back to this fast delivery expectations, it is really too long. And the people, they are seeking for someone who can present them a promise of a fast delivery. If we analyze the promise of mainstream parties, we already knew what is their performance, and we don't believe that they will deliver. The lesson from Poland, it is also that this kind of promise was made before the 2023 elections. The leader of the opposition, Donald Tusk, today's prime minister, he promised a very simple thing, and using his own words, when we will win the elections and form the government, the Poles will have more money in their wallets, the prices in the Polish shops get lower, and each and every Polish household will do better. None of these three things happened.
Look, we are getting a little bit to a clip of this episode, but before I let you go, it looks like we had a sparkle in a very dark tunnel, and now there is a very dark tunnel. It seems to be almost no way to return from it, but I don't want to be so defeatist. I mean, let's try to, in the final question, cover the ways in which especially progressive politics in those very... Well, you know, one could say doomsday scenario, and we don't even need to go into complexity of the overall context. What can a progressive mainstream, if you want, and traditional party do? We are at the moment discussing, we're ahead of the big pan-European Congress of Renewal. I think we are searching for hope and new ways. So if I was to ask you, what should we be looking at in order to indeed make a return, not in the same shape, but in a different shape, where would those sources of re-empowerment of the progressivism lie?
Well, in fact, we are going straight towards the fourth lesson.
Fantastic. That's a good grand finale, Martin.
I think that the progressive agenda is up to the people's expectations, because to some extent it was adopted by the populists. Of course, they are using their own language, their own narratives to present, because it all refers to the very same, very well research and very well named issues and problems of the society. But the fourth lesson I mentioned was the media consumption model. And this is what we have discovered during this campaign. It is that people are turning away from the traditional media and they are turning to a different model of consumption. They use traditional media. I'm not referring to the newspapers, especially printed one, or some radio broadcasters, TV broadcasters in the linear television, but I am also referring to all these internet outlets, a traditional one. They are all used only to indicate the facts, what have happened, but people are not consuming the narrative presented in the traditional media, because they are turning away from them and they're seeking a commentary, someone who will digest this all this massive amount of facts which are happening all over the world. On the one hand, this is Iran with the Israel, this is United States, something happening in our own country. They need someone to explain them what is happening. And in this field, the progressives are beaten. I would call a Joe Rogan effect, referring to the podcaster, one of the biggest and more influential in the United States. We already have such people in Poland, and they play a crucial role in these elections. Because they collect all these facts, they digest them, and they give a kind of extract with the narrative tending right or even extreme right. And people are consuming this this commentary on their iPhones, and they are doing this for free, or iPhones or Android phones or whatever.
Of course,
they're on their smartphones. And the idea that all these podcasts, all these YouTube so-called television channels, they're different from the traditional media, which are turning to the paywall policies. So they are not available easy for the people, available or affordable. And all these leaning right commentaries are for free. And today they are dominating the infosphere. And if we look to the raw numbers, not some narrative or a tale of the researcher, the numbers of people who watched four hour long interview with a politician can reach up to 4 million people. It is unthinkable in linear television. But those people receive not only this 4 hour long interview, but they also receive a 15 minutes up to 20 minutes commentary. What do they what should they think about this? And it all closes in a right-leaning narrative. If the progressives are unable to build their own structures of this infotainment, because this is what it is, they will not able to approach people with even best agenda, because they will have no channels to communicate with them. And the idea of this media revolution or media consumption revolution is based on not reaching those alpha voters, which already knew everything. They follow each and every news and they have their own opinion. But they're approaching a beta voters, which came on the market on the bigger number. And they are selling to these people a promise that using all these digested narratives and so on, they may become an alpha voters. So it is an aspirational promise.
Of course,
and
yeah.
This is so attractive for these people that they start to follow that media, talk the language they were taught through this process of commentaries, of interviews, of all these digested narratives. And what I see in Poland, we have a dozens of such channels, more or less popular. But on the other side, we have only one, two podcasters, Jakub Dymek and Marcin Giebzak, and they are the only ones who are doing something with the progressive agenda. And even if they have so many followers, their impact, comparing them to these dozens of people with million wide
audience.
Well, it is very encouraging that they're doing this, but the impact is, well, it's obvious.
With that, I will have to say that this has been a fascinating conversation, and I do hope that, especially in the light of the last comment, this particular podcast episode is going to contribute to changing the trends, since we've been discussing the context, how to understand that, and what is the way should the progressives amass the willingness. And I think, you know, there is something to be said about the communication that might be empowering. Marcin Duma, CEO of IBRIS, was mine and your guest on this pioneering episode of FEPS Talks, ahead of the PES Congress, ahead of the discussion about the new chapter of renewal of social democracy. Marcin, thank you so much for being and opening these doors and understanding for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This series of podcasts is only part of the series of the FEPS Talks. You can find many of them pertaining democracy, socioeconomic dimension, digital, climate, foreign policy, gender equality, and many, many others via our YouTube channel. We wholeheartedly recommend all of them to your attention. We would be incredibly, incredibly grateful if you felt like intervening and leaving your comments behind. Thanks so much, and I do hope to see you online and hear soon from you in the future.